starting to do field work for this section, trying to find out what people in the forestry businesses in North Florida were doing, one of the things that we discovered was that it is very often a family concern in one way or another. Often it'll be a matter of the son following the father in the same kind of work, but also that the businesses will be family businesses, whether it's a sawmill or a grocery store that supports the that's there open at 4 o'clock in the morning for the loggers to buy things on their way to work, or in this case, a logging concern. And what we have here are three representatives of one family. In the middle, Mrs. Lugene Baxley, who has been talking about her experiences with us here a few minutes ago, and then her two sons on this side, Tony, and on the other side, Danny. We'll start with Danny because I know that he likes to talk about this. Talk a little bit about your part of the business and what it is that you do.
Well, I run the logging crew. We've got two crews. Tony runs a chipping operation. I run the logging crew. And basically what we do, we cut for Georgia Pacific. Cut mostly pine. Basically, we have three separations on pine, pupwood, chipping saw, and ply logs. Sometimes we'll get into a block where we'll sort some poles out for telephone, light poles, things like that, barn poles, things like that. And I do the logging is what I do.
Me, Aaron?
Go ahead, Tony. Tell me about your
part. Yeah, I run the chip
part.
Side. We make clean paper chips, what they go straight to the mill for paper, just like what a mill would produce. And then we do what we call a fuel wood operation, like a logger goes in and he cuts out all the hardwood and the pine out of it, at least smaller trees. We take everything from 2 inches up. Instead of the paper company having to come in and KG land, run the KG blade over it and windrow it, then we'll come in and take everything off it where they don't cost them anything to site prep, to come right straight in behind us and replant.
Now that it's called fuel wood. Who uses it for fuel?
Georgia Pacific uses it to fire their boilers at Palatka paper plant to generate electricity. They're about 60% self-efficient over there on their energy. It keeps them from buying bunker seed oil, and also it gets their land cleared. And they say the fuel wood burns hotter than oil does anyway.
What kind of machinery do you use for cutting down these little
kind of trees? We got two tree shears. One's on a 643 John Deere and a 775 Barco. And just snips them off like a pair of scissors, I guess. Feller muncher is what you call them. And then if we run in pine, like in Ocala National Forest, production there is 18 to 20 loads a day. And then on hardwood and fuel wood, it's anywhere from 12 to 15, depending on the size of the tree.
Okay. Let's trace back a little bit and get Lugene to tell us about how it got started that you have two different sides to your business here.
Well, the boys couldn't work together. They both wanted to be a boss. And in one wood, you don't need but one boss. So we had some extra pieces of equipment setting up and just needed one or two more to go with it. So we just got another piece or two and put Danny in one woods and Tony in the other woods, and everything runs smooth now.
Tony, why did you choose chipping? Do you like that job
better? I like
the
chipping better than logging. Danny, he don't like logging. That's like Daddy, whenever he was raised in sawmill work, his brother, Daddy never liked the sawmill, but his brothers did. So.
What do you like about chipping?
Don't have to handle it as much. They ain't got all that wood piled up, nothing to do with it.
tell them, I didn't understand about what a chipper was till somebody showed it to me. Tell them about that.
It's a whole tree chipper. You feed it right in the back end of the machine. It's got its own knuckle boom loader mounted up. It's 700 horsepower. And just, if you're running like fuel wood, like these trees, well, it'll take up to a tree 20 inches in diameter. But say like that little oak tree right there, you just stick the whole tree in it. It just chips it, limbs, top, leaves, everything. Just don't do anything to it. And just go straight in and make fuel wood out of it. And it goes across a gas-fired boiler, and it's blowing hot air with a flame that's already started, and it just creates a lot hotter flame when that fuel wood burns across it. And then they take the ash, and it's hauled from Georgia Pacific over to Romeo, Florida, to Husky Charcoal, and they make charcoal out of ash.
Lugene, I know you've heard talk about a whole bunch of different kinds of machinery, but Did we figure out yesterday how much you all must have invested in machinery? How much does it cost?
I would say we'd have over $1 million.
$1 million. What are all the different kinds of things that you have to have in your business?
You don't have much hair.
We can make Tony tell us about the
Tony
machines.
Can tell you more.
All right,
about
Tony, give us the rundown.
Well, we got to have fellow once you start with, cut down the trees, and then usually some chainsaws to limb it up, and skidders to pull it, and then get loaded on a truck or by a knuckle boom loader, or stuck in a chipper by nut loader on a chipper, and then trucks to haul it. So, like on my job, I've got two fellow bunchers that cuts trees down, three machines pulling, and then a spare machine setting up.
Do you all know what a feller buncher is? Can you give us an explanation?
What I was talking about was a tree shear. It's a machine that's got two hydraulic cylinders, one on each side, and just shoves a pair of blades through a tree just like a pair of scissors. And just snips it off, and then the arm will come up and grab it and hold it. And then they go up and cut off another tree, and you might get 8 or 10 or ever have, depending on the size trees in.
That was one of the most amazing things I had ever seen when they back this thing up and it goes snip, and this tree, this big around, just kind of pops, and it's been cut off. But I know now, Danny, you were telling me about you have a different kind of machine. You don't use the
I run a saw head. I have a three-wheel machine built in South Africa that's got a hydraulic saw on it. Runs a 404 chain with a 24-inch bar. And on the logs and chipping saw we haul, as of July the 1st, Georgia Pacific will not accept no more wood cut with a hydraulic shear. It has to be sawed. The problem they have when they saw the tree and the lumber and dry the lumber splits, and they lose 1 to 2 foot of the lumber. So they've made us go to a saw, so when it saws it off, it does not compress the wood fiber and damage it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
GP was figuring between the chipping saw mills at Cross City, Palaka, and their veneer mill at Hawthorne, they was losing 90,000 board feet a week on shatter butt because of the shatter part in the butt.
Mm-hmm. How do you manage, how does a family operation manage to own all of this equipment and keep it going?
A lot of hard work.
A lot of arguing.
A lot of aggravation.
Now, I heard that Lugene had some say in,
Well, the boys figure out what they want, and then they come.
Then we argue in Mama's bottom line.
Then they come to Mama and say, we're going to buy this. I said, we are? And then we go look at it, and then we talk about it some more. No, we're not going to buy it now. But Mama, we got to have it, but later, not right now. And then they keep on and keep on, and maybe a month and a half later, they might get it if we have to have it.
How do you finance these? I mean, they cost tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes. How do you swing that?
Different finance companies and banks. No problem.
So do you ever really?
We just hope we're going to be able to work and pay for it.
Work and pay for it. All right. Questions out there? Do people have questions? Yeah.
No, they deal all over the world. One of the biggest paper companies in the world. Mm-hmm. They buy the timber, usually. Now, we can buy it, too, but they usually buy the timber. Danny buys a lot of outside wood for chip job. They usually buy all our timber. And they just contract us to go in to cut it, chip it up, haul it, and then pay us so much a ton to put it to their mill.
But
yeah, that's all we work right now. Unless you know where some better money is, and we'll.
We'll think about it.
Yeah.
We sure need a raise.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, what are the machines that are out here? Can you?
The one in the back is a Caterpillar grapple skidder. That's what they call a 518 grapple skidder. And what you do, you back up to your trees and open your grapple up on the back. And it grapples a tree, and you pick it up, and you go forward with it. And it drags the trees out to the loading ramp. And then the other machine is a fire plow on a forestry truck. But a grapple skidder is like what we run sitting in the back. John Deere makes them, Franklin, Timberjack, Tree Farmer, Caterpillar.
Clark.
There's several brands of them. Yes,
ma'am. We cut a lot of government wood. On a chip job, we cut a lot of government wood. down in Ocala National Forest. See, they got a 365,000 acre forest there, and it goes up for public bid. And GP, you know, bids on it, and they get it, and we cut it for them, help them produce it, which along with other loggers. And that's a lot of dry wood. It's all dry timber, dry ground, so it's good for backup. Like if they got a bunch of wood bought up that's in lower areas, when we start getting a bunch of rain, and we just fall back there. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
We've got some forest that we've cut this year that's already, they're already starting to replant now.
We might do some select cutting where we just go in and take the pupwood out, or take the bad trees out, or the scarred trees, things like that, and try to leave a good stand to grow. Or we might go in and take the pupwood out and get the big logs out, and that way the landowner gets his bad wood out and gets money for his big wood, and still has a good stand of trees to grow for the future.
Better. It takes down all the bushes and stuff. You start to get too many bushes and too much buildup, you got too high of a risk of fire. That's the reason they control
burning. A lot of people don't do enough of controlled burning.
And they're getting too many state regulations on stopping a lot of it.
If you get into a standard...
A lot more chance of having a bad forest fire if you don't.
It gets growed up real bad, and if it ever catches fire, there's no way of stopping it. They control burn it every 2 or 3 years. It keeps the bushes down low, you know, where if a fire did get out in there, it wouldn't be much fuel to keep it going.
Okay, go ahead. This is what we're here for.
You got it. This one right here.
Yes, ma'am.
Small stuff, you know, we more or less do what we want to and run it the way we want to. But
when
if it comes to major business decisions, you better go to the major one. You don't, you're in a heap of trouble.
Yeah, we always sit down and talk about something before we do something, you know.
Yeah.
As far as buying a piece of equipment or something like that.
What about taking care of all this equipment? Is that a big part of what you do? Do you split that up, or does somebody take responsibility
for
that?
My brother-in-law, he works with us too, and he also helps us in maintenance. He gets the hydraulics and electrical stuff. We try to do everything in-house except machine work, you know, where you got to have a piece fitted or something like that. But all any other mechanics, welding, building, anything, we do all that ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's just too costly to try to hire everything out.
One day they're going to invent something so we can make some money.
I wish.
Other questions from the audience? We've got a few more minutes here. I can't think of what else to ask you all about.
You're supposed to be ready for all this. So you was going to get on me, right?
I know.
Have you ever invented anything that makes it easier for your business?
Well, not that we got paid for. We, on our chipper, we made about 6 or 8 changes on it that Mobark, the people that built it, has changed their assembly line and put on, but didn't give us anything for it. And we also got a screen when we're making our clean chips, what we call it, to go straight for paper rather than fuel wood. It blows into this machine, the chipper does, and it sorts out the sizes of chips. Your oversized stuff falls to the bottom of it, and it goes into one trailer. And the stuff that's too small falls to the bottom and goes into one trailer. You run about 10 clean ones to one dirty one, what we call. And we've made that machine. They claim it's not capable of like 50 tons an hour, and ours will do 100. And it's the same machine that they're selling, but it's just got several different adjustments on it. And does just a good job. So,
how old were each of you when you started going into the woods? And
full-time or
well,
playing?
Tell us the whole story.
About that big.
Well, I guess me and Tony started really working in the woods, and we was about 12, 13, you know, during the summer, you know, and both of us, we finished up the 11th grade at high school and went to work full-time in the woods then, and then got our diplomas going to school at night.
Couldn't wait to go to work, damn fool.
Daddy tried to tell us to do something different, but we was too hard-headed.
Daddy offered to put both of us in college, buy us a car, put both of us in college. I don't want you to do this. I want you to do something else. No, Daddy, I want to go to work.
Don't be a logger like you, Daddy.
I wouldn't do nothing else, though.
What do you like best about it?
I just like being in the woods, running
he
the equipment.
He likes getting up early is what he likes, I know.
Okay, Tony.
cutting the big, pretty timber. Only way I'd ever get out of it, and then I don't know if I'd get out of it if I won the Florida lottery.
Then you could log for fun.
Yeah, I could go out and buy anything I want to do and just work when I want to do, you know.
I win the lottery. The only way I'm going to see a load of logs is going down the road and say, boy, them poor old boys going there.
It is incredibly hard work doing this stuff. What time do you get out in the morning?
Well, I usually get to the shop. I live about 3 miles from the shop. I usually get there about 5:45 every morning. And depending on how far I'm working from home, it's usually 5:30, 6 o'clock, sometimes later before I get back there. Then we generally sit out on the porch and drink a glass of tea or something for 30 minutes or an hour before we go home. So usually I leave home about 5:30 every morning, get home about 7 o'clock that night.
And raid the refrigerator, and you don't run out of groceries or you got to leave.
See, that's the gathering place every evening when we knock off. We got to go to Mama's and tell her what we've done all day. She got to have something to eat there. She better have it.
At least one pitcher of iced tea.
Now, Lou Jean, you claim you're semi-retired. Do you still have to get up real early to get things on the road? Or
no.
No, since I remarried, he don't like to wake up till 8 o'clock.
Ah, the life of
sometimes later.
The time. He's getting me lazy just like
I used to see Mama up many a time at 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning because she was so used to it. She'd be outside washing the car at 4:30 in the morning because she just couldn't sleep.
She's getting lazy now, though. She deserves to get a little bit lazy.
Maybe that's a good place to stop. I think our musicians are about ready to go on. Does anybody else want to ask these folks anything more? Okay. We'll thank them and have some music for you in a few minutes.
Yeah, you heard that guy say, hey.
Move back a little bit further and still hear me.
There you go.
Test.
Jeff, all these boys right here picks.
Do they?
Ain't that good?
That's great.
How many pickers we got out there? Let's see. Here. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's good.
There you go. Just like, it don't work.
Like Paul Mahary.
If it's any way possible that I could pour talent into someone, I'd love to see all young, like them little fiddle players out there. Oh, they just thrill me. If you got a child that's real young, I'll tell you, you can start them at a real early age if you wanted to. And you'd be surprised. I mean, that would really be a blessing to them. Right? Music is something that we have learned down through the years at conference. Everybody. You grab up a guitar, banjo, or anything, you can beat on a paper bag and get somebody's attention. Did you know that? and it's just something about music. It's just so great. And we have really counted it a great privilege to be here in this wonderful festival, this time. And I tell you what, we're just going to get right on in here and do some of this good old bluegrass music. And I'm sure that you're going to enjoy it. We was riding somewhere several years ago, and Virgil, he was strumming on the old banjo a little bit, and he said, I want to write a tune. And I had the privilege to go over to Israel, and I was down at the River of Jordan, and he got picking so good. I said, I really had a great time over in the at the River of Jordan. And he wrote a little instrumental called Muddy Jordan. So let's go, Virgil. Picked with everybody on the festival ground, but I really like it. I'll tell you that right now. And they're really having a good time over at with all the fiddles. And my boy was practiced for 3 hours with those ladies playing the fiddle, and come to find out he's got to be over here and them over at the same time, so he couldn't go over there. Here's a real old song that I wrote some time ago. And I want you to listen to the words of this song right here. I wrote this about my mother that's done gone on to be with the Lord. And I'll tell you, I like to sing songs like this right here. I've been looking through mother's faded Bible, reading the blessings of the Lord. I can see the tears stained pages where my mother often lived before. Though her hands, they're old, callous, and the played Pretty Virgil on that five string song. Jimmy.